Well, now we know who to blame when things go wrong. Good to know. Okay. I broke my shoe this morning. I'm thinking that's your fault. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So welcome, everybody. It's great to see you here today. And the topic that I'm talking about today is, however can we change them? I'm wondering if anybody has anybody in their life that they feel that they want to change. Oh, now, you didn't have to raise your hand. Some people feel very adamant about it, evidently. It's not only the people that we want in our life, it's the conditions in our life that we really want to change. However will we change them, meaning the conditions. And not only our personal conditions, but also our global conditions as well. I know that probably many of you, like me, were deeply saddened and touched by what happened yesterday in Pittsburgh with the shooting in the synagogue. What a tragedy that was. And I know that that, for me personally, touches me on such a deep level. For one thing, because it's a worship service, and it's such a hideous, blasphemous attack on innocence, you know, as during a baby naming. And can we change that? Can we change that? And how do we change that? Well, the science of mind teaching would say that it's all about me. It's all about us. That much of the situations that are going on in the world are a collection of perceptions. And as we start one by one changing our perceptions, we can change that flow of perceptions. And that ultimately responds by a changing in the conditions in the world. But we start with ourselves. Now, I know that when I've taught classes before, and we talk about that we have to change ourselves in order to have others change. No, she's tinkling over there. It's okay. No, please, you know that, I know you're new and cell phones are a great joy to me, okay? You getting that? I'm not hurt by that at all. Cell phones are a great joy to me. I love them. I know. The timing of cell phones is amazing. So later on, we'll know why that cell phone tinkled in that particular moment. And we talk about tinkling in this church a lot, too. Just so you know. Okay. So where was I? Okay. So when I've taught classes before, you know, even the other night, we were talking about how if you want to change somebody, you look at how you might be projecting your shadow onto that person and start working with your shadow and seeing how you can have greater acceptance of your shadow side. And we also look at our reactivity, you know, that we're not necessarily responsible for how people show up in our lives, but we certainly are responsible for our reaction to them. So if somebody says something to us, we can react in a million different ways, but we are responsible for our reaction to what happens in the world. We can react with despair or hope. We can react with anger or peace. We can react with joy or sorrow. Whatever it is, we are responsible for our reaction that happens. Now, I've noticed as I was meditating on this topic that some of what we teach, you know, that we have to really work on ourselves in order to change others. We change ourselves and we work on ourselves. It often involves a certain amount of scrutiny. What's the word? Scrutiny. Scrutiny. What did I say? Scrutiny. Oh, it's kind of like scrutiny plus unity, right? A unified scrutiny. Okay, so I'm claiming that word. It involves scrutiny or scrutiny, if you choose. We're looking for our flaws. We're looking for what's wrong with us so that we can fix it. And there's power in that. There's good in that. But what if we were actually investing as much energy in looking for something else and elevating that? Eric Butterworth, in his essay, beautiful essay that I will send to you all next week in the newsletter, beautiful essay, it's called How to Change Other People. And yeah, don't get your hopes up, okay? <It's> but he talks about instead of trying to set people right, trying to see people right. And what if we could also see ourselves right in that process? And what is seeing it right or seeing ourselves right? What does that really mean? Well, I think it means recognizing the truth of reality, that we live in this abiding absolute reality that is a reality of wholeness and love, and recognizing our place in that, that we are that absolute reality of wholeness and love, and we get to experience as much of that wholeness and love as we are willing to allow in and to allow out. Giving and receiving are the same energy. The thing about that is that this absolute reality that is wholeness and love is very, very challenging for our human minds to comprehend. Heisenberg said, not the guy in Breaking Bad, but Heisenberg, the real Heisenberg, said that reality is not only stranger than we think, it is stranger than we can think, right? And Richard Rohr paraphrases that with God. He says, God is not only stranger than we think, God is stranger than we can think. Love is not only stranger than we think, love is stranger than we can think. If you don't believe in God or love, science is not only stranger than we think, science is stranger than we can think. Have you noticed? There's some incredible miracles in science that nobody can explain. So there's a story about St. Augustine. And St. Augustine was walking by the sea, and he happened upon this little boy that was trying to pick up the ocean in his hands. And he asked the little boy, "What are you doing?" And the boy said, "I know that if I pick up the ocean in my hands and can hold it, I will understand God." And the ocean dripped away out of his hands because he couldn't contain the ocean. And St. Augustine was about to give him some advice. And then an angel appeared to St. Augustine, and the angel said, "St. Augustine, that little boy is you. You have been trying to understand God, trying to understand love with the small cup of your mind, and it keeps trickling away. To understand God, you need to fling yourself into the ocean of love and see what happens there." It reminds me very much of another story I heard by a Jesuit, Anthony de Mello, who wrote about this character called a salt doll. A salt, two words, salt, like salt, not a salt, but salt. Okay, a doll made out of salt, let's put it that way. And the doll made out of salt started wondering who she was, and she went to one teacher after another. Maybe she took a seminar at a religious science church, and maybe she went to EST, although it's not really EST anymore, is it? Maybe she went to see a therapist. Maybe she went to the Scientologists. Maybe she, I don't know where she went, but she went to all these different places and asking the question, "Who am I? Who am I? Who am I?" And then let's say that she went back to that religious science church, because we are the best one. And in fact, this church is the best one. So she went back to that religious science church, and she said, "You know, I really need to find out who I am." And because we are the best one, because we're right by the Pacific Ocean, we said, "Well, salt doll, why don't you walk down to the ocean and see who you really are?" And so the salt doll stood at the foot of the waves, and the waves started washing up on her. She said, "Wow, this feels awfully familiar, and it kind of smells familiar too. Let me go in a little bit deeper. Wow, this feels kind of good. Let me go in a little bit deeper. Let me go in a little bit deeper and a little bit deeper. Let me plunge deeper into this ocean." And ultimately, the salt doll dissolved and became more of who she was. You get that? You get that? Do you get that? Dot, do you get that? Karen? Chris, do you get it? Okay. Anybody going to say no to that question? Yeah. She went into the ocean of love and became more of who she was. And that's what I'm calling forth for all of us today, to move into that ocean of love and become more of who we are. And how the heck do you do that? Well, life will give you many opportunities. I'll tell you one of the things that has been helpful for me. I spoke about this on Thursday with my foundations class, and it's also in my blog. So if you've read those or if you attend class, just you're going to be super bored for the next 5 minutes. No, I'm kidding. You can just pray for the people around you, okay? My brother and board president, Brock, Brother Brock, and I will often greet each other by saying, "Ishq Allah." Ishq Allah. You want to say that after me? Ishq Allah. It's beautiful that she said it without, maybe you don't even know what it means, but she said it, which is great. Ishq. Ishq is crazy, passionate, mad, insane, sticky, smelly love for God. Say it again. Ishq is sticky, smelly, passionate, mad embodiment love for God. Rumi, said, the beloved God wants to kiss you, and when he kisses you, you will die. You will dissolve like that salt doll into the ocean, and you will become more of who you are. That's what Ishq is. And Allah is, of course, another name for God. Now, one of the beautiful things about Allah that touches my heart is that the first time my husband, Hugh, walked into a religious science church and he saw that V, and it wasn't in Ventura, so he knew it didn't stand for Ventura, right? He saw the V and he goes, oh, Allah, Allah. And he learned that from his teacher, Pir Vilayat, right? Pir Vilayat Khan, who was a Sufi, who talked about how the energy of spirit comes down and forms into matter and then spreads into matter across the world. Now, we had a little discussion about this yesterday, and we didn't entirely agree, but I'm going to tell you my version about it, and he can correct me when we get home. But I also see it as involution and evolution. In old religious science, we don't talk about it that much now, but we used to talk a lot about involution and evolution. So God involved itself in matter, and matter evolves to become spirit. Involution, evolving, moving into, involving, moving into, and evolving, moving out. It's, as my husband has told me, because he studied the dervishes as well, that it's part of the dervish turn, that the dervish will turn the counterclockwise, which is the energy of involution, bringing matter down, bringing matter down bringing spirit down into the realm of matter, whereas the sheikh stands in the middle and turns clockwise, evolving that outward to bless the world. Is that beautiful or what? Right? So that's what Ishq Allah means to me. So if I see you and I say, Ishq Allah, just know that I am just celebrating God, and I'm celebrating God with you, and I'm inviting you to celebrate God. I'm inviting you to celebrate love. I'm inviting you to be like that salt doll and dissolve into more of who you really are. And you know who you really are? You are an ecstatic dancer in reality. You are the ecstatic dance of reality. Ishq Allah Mabud Allah means God is love, lover, and beloved. That's a phrase that was coined, I believe, by Pir Vilayat's father, Azrat Khan, right? And God is love, lover, and beloved. Love is love, lover, and beloved. You are all of those things. And the more that we can get in touch with that energy, the more that we can get in touch with that feeling that we have dissolved into something greater than we are, that the ego, that the separate self has dissolved into something greater than we can even imagine. Because remember, life, love, God, spirit, Ishq is not only stranger than we think, it is stranger and grander than we can think. As soon as we move into that, things change. Things change profoundly. I have a story about that. This is from one of my friends that I met while I was in India. When I was in India, I hung out a lot because they wanted to sing all the time, so I would sing with them, with a young couple from Turkey. The man was a German Protestant, about in his 20s, married to a Muslim woman from Istanbul. An interesting combination, but they worked it out. And they were both young, and they were both beautiful, and both wonderful, and we would sing all the time. And I've kept in touch with them since we left India through very strange events. It's just been a beautiful synchronicity. I'll tell about that another time. But the husband, his name is Marian, and the wife is Aslinur. Marian wrote to me and said this amazing thing happened. They do what they call soul tours, where they invite people from all over the world to come to Turkey, and then they take them to sacred sites. They take them to see the dervishes, or they take them to mosques. Aslinur, the wife, is the daughter of dervish, and her grandfather was a dervish as well. And so they take these people to these beautiful sites, and many of the people are not Muslim, but they are interested, and they are curious, and they are trying to expand their experience. And so they were at this very famous mosque. I don't remember where it was, but they were at this mosque, and they were sitting in a circle, having a sacred circle, talking about their experiences. And all of a sudden, these two men sat down aggressively close to the circle. They sat down and they were intruding upon the circle, not physically joining the circle, but standing near enough to the circle and complaining about them, the people in the circle, in a loud voice, saying aggressive and unkind things. Now, many of the people in the circle did not speak Turkish. These men were speaking in Turkish, but Aslinor and her husband, Marian, did, and they knew what they were saying, and it was hateful and it was unkind, and they were saying things like, you know, these people are ridiculous, these stupid tourists coming to our country, and more, even more aggressive than that. And finally, one of them said, what do these people know about Islam? This is ridiculous. They shouldn't even be here. And Aslinur, because the circle automatically started sending these men love, Aslinur turned to them and said with a big smile on her face, I am Muslim. I'm teaching them about our faith. And she saw them get shocked for just a moment. And in that moment of shock, there was a moment of vulnerability. And she said, would you like to join our circle? And they did. They sat in the circle, and it was awkward at first, but after a little while, people started asking them questions. What do you like about Islam? How has this faith changed your life? Tell us about your family. Tell us about how this faith has changed your relationship with your family. And by the end of the encounter, an hour later, they all posed for a group photo. So you see how it works? That is ishq. That is ishq Allah. That is an ecstatic sacred dance that brings us to places that our small self cannot imagine. And we can all do this. This is all part of our chemistry. This is all part of our makeup. This is all part of who we are. I invite you to start small. You don't have to start with the hardest thing in the world. Start small. First of all, discover what brings you to that place of ishq Allah, what brings you to that place of wholeness, what brings you to that place of glory and recognizing that the world is a miracle. In the blog that I wrote about it, I talked about the sound of wings. When I'm hiking with my dog, Saraswati, and Bartok. Bartok stays right by my side, but Saraswati is a hunter, and she likes to charge into the bushes. She points first, right? She points first. And freezes, and then she'll charge into the bushes, and a silent flock of quail will come out of the bushes, 20 quail with a sound of wings. And that to me is ishq. There is no sound as beautiful as that. The sound of feathers and air. And who made that? Who created that? Who created the sound of wings? Who created a dog that points so clearly and so dearly? Who created the ears of me to hear it? What makes all that happen? That's power. That's love. That's ishq. And then we can take that, energy and recognize, you know, she's been doing this for years and I just started noticing it. There's an old Jewish prayer that talks about how we walk sightless among miracles and we also walk deaf among miracles. All of our senses are here to awaken us to miracles. And so I started looking at how I walk deaf among miracles. And one of the things, I've shared this before, but one of the things I've been working on is the fact that the Santa Paula High School lives like 2 minutes from my house, 2 seconds from my house, and the band practices almost every day, and they play On Wisconsin every day. I know their repertoire so well, On Wisconsin, and their most offensive piece is a salsa version of Für Elise, Beethoven's Für Elise. So it's like... But what if I am deaf among miracles when I'm listening to them? So started changing that. God, help me to hear this differently. God, help me to see this differently. And before too long, in a matter of seconds, in the span of the infinite, all of a sudden I was no longer hearing annoying music that was disturbing me. I was seeing and hearing children engaged in productive activity, pointing at the graciousness of music and lifting themselves up and lifting all of us up. And now I look forward to hearing the band play. So this is all available for you, all available for all of us, because as I said, life gives us many opportunities. Anytime we are feeling disappointed, anytime we are feeling hurt, anytime we are feeling like we want to change somebody, that is the opportunity to practice this ishq concept. That is the opportunity to move into that place where we dissolve into the truth of who we are and allow that to shine through us in mystical and magical ways. We don't have to do the changing. We have to see it right, set it right, and we call upon the God within us to help us see it right. A prayer from the Course in Miracles, help me to see this differently. One of the most powerful prayers ever. We can use this in personal circumstances. We can use this in conditions that we want to change, and most certainly we can use it in global conditions. In the situation with the synagogue that I spoke about at the beginning of this talk, where the shooting happened and where those really tragic, innocent people were killed just for going to a place of worship and just for who they were, we can look at that through the eyes of Ishq. We can recognize that, yes, it is sorrow, and sorrow is so intertwined with love, and it breaks our heart. It breaks our heart in order to crack us open wide to the greater yet to be. I was speaking with somebody yesterday who was reading a biography about Walt Disney, and one of the things that he asked is, what breaks your heart? And coincidentally, they asked us that when we were in India, too. What breaks your heart? Because if something breaks your heart, that might be yours. That might be your vision. That might be your mission to move into that place of being greater than the problem and being part of the solution. So we allow our hearts to be broken open, and that is part of Ishq, too, because it is the wholeness of God, is the absolute reality that contains both joy and sorrow, darkness and light. And the other thing that we do is that we compel ourselves. We compel ourselves to follow the wisdom of Mr. Rogers and Chris Kimbler, who posted it on his Facebook page. Focus on the helpers. Focus on the helpers. Since the shooting yesterday, the interfaith group has been emailing back and forth, and Reverend Judy, where she is, there she is, Reverend Judy and me and some of the Christian ministers, the Catholic priest who runs the mission, and we've been contacting Rabbi Lisa, who's the minister of the temple in Ventura, Temple Beth Torah, and we've been saying, what can we do? How can we help? Know that we support you. We are praying for you. We are praying for the Jewish people everywhere. Please, please, let us know how we can help you. And she wrote back the sweetest note saying how meaningful that was to her. So we focus on the helpers, and we do as much as we can to bring this solidarity of love, this solidarity of purpose, this solidarity of knowing that everything is amazingly unfolding, and that whenever anything desperate or bad or despairing happens, it is just an invitation for us to work harder, but not harder in the way that the world says work harder. Work harder in recognizing the truth of existence. Recognizing that we are all God, and that God calls us to serve in beautiful, mystical, wonderful ways that uplift everyone. So whether you're doing this for yourself as an individual, or whether you're doing it in the world, is the same thing. And the other common denominator is that we can't just think about it. We have to do it. If you go to our website, there's a tab that says activism, and the three ways that we advocate activism in this church in particular. I don't know that all Religious Science churches do it this way, but this is a lot of because of our involvement with the Service Space organization. The three ways that we advocate being an activist is, first of all, to pray for wholeness, to recognize that there is an underlying wholeness that wants to express through any situation that feels like brokenness, to pray for wholeness first, and then to become skilled in practices of reconciliation, in practices of conversation where you can actually listen to the other side and hear their point of view. You don't have to agree with it, but you can just hear. And a lot of miracles happen in the hearing, as it did in that circle that took place in Turkey, what I told you about, when people actually started listening to each other. So we practice skills of reconciliation, and we'll be doing more of that in the coming year, by the way. And then the other thing is that we dispel the illusion of separation by practicing small and random acts of kindness. Ridiculous acts of kindness that seem ridiculous because they seem so small that how could they possibly make a difference? But the truth is that they do. The truth is that all of our acts of kindness make a difference because things ripple out. things ripple out, and we are part of a gigantic movement of kindness, a whirlpool of kindness, a tsunami wave of kindness that is changing the world for good. So that's all, folks. That's all I've got to say. Are you with me on this?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Ishkala.
Ishkala.
Thank you. Let's say namaste.
Namaste.
And in honor of our Jewish brothers and sisters, let's say shalom.
Shalom.
Thank you. And let us pray.